people behind the scenes that did all the work. We just came up with the idea and they implemented it. So all the thanks goes to the team.
Come on, Damien, you need to get up here too then. Yeah, there are two shields here, isn't there? Yeah, exactly.
There is.
Yeah. Being it's your training tool, I thought maybe, Damien, yeah, you want to say something about...
Good with you not calling me up the first time.
Well, again, this reads, just to let everybody know, El Paso del Robles Public Safety Center training presented to in appreciation to the Paso Robles City Council in recognition of your dedication to public service, safety, and the lasting investment in those who protect, serve our community. Together, we build a safer, stronger, and more resilient future. Thank you to both departments for doing that. And again, you want to say something about the actual?
Well, I just want to say thank you to all of our council members who have always been supportive of public safety, as well as the community, because this wouldn't be possible without Measure J20 and Congressman Panetta, who was present, who got us $500,000 to go towards it. That facility was $1.8 million, and all of it, except for the $500,000, was all from J20.
I know you can do smoke training, but does it do bullet type?
They've already broken a couple of doors, so yes, they've been in there.
You know, typically the cops are the ones that break the windows when they shouldn't be doing that.
That's why we don't have glass in there. Yes.
Okay. Again, so. I just want to recognize you both. Thank you guys for doing what you've done, and it's going to be a great tool.
Yes.
Thank you. All right, getting back on regular scheduled program here, we have presentations, homeless services, quarterly report, and point in time count. Ashley Hernandez.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Ashley Hernandez, homeless services manager, and I'm gonna keep tonight's quarterly homeless services update brief to ensure we have plenty of time for our guest presentation on the latest point in time results. Before I begin, I want to thank Council for identifying housing and homelessness as one of the city's six strategic goals for fiscal year 2026 through 2028. Including this work in the strategic work plan gives staff clear direction and importantly creates a framework for accountability in measuring our progress. Tonight's update is organized around the four objectives Council established under Goal 3 and highlights some of the work already underway. The first objective is developing a coordinated homelessness communication and outreach framework that includes our community's resource guide, the city's homeless services webpage, quarterly council updates like this one tonight, and our city's impact and homelessness dashboard. Our goal is twofold. We want someone who needs help to understand where to go and how to access services. But we also want residents and businesses to understand what the city is doing, who is responsible for what, and what our data is telling us. So transparency is a very important part of this work, and we're continuing to build that into how we communicate with the community. Today, you will see next to our agenda, I have some flyers, and they're also here online. These are some of the outreach materials the city provides to community members looking for information or assistance. We've developed resources that answer two questions we hear frequently. The first is, I need help, where do I go? And the second is, I'm seeing something in the community, who do I call? The intent is to make navigating what can be a complicated system much easier for everyone. And they are available, like I said, at the table where the agendas are for the public tonight. Another major component of the objective is our public dashboard. For the 9-month period since our dashboard has started from October 1st through June 30th, 111 people exited ECHO's 90-day program directly into permanent housing. So I just want to take a moment for that. It's really important that people get access to that, and it's been a pleasure to work with ECHO and see the success stories that happen through there. Our community action team is out in the street doing outreach. They've completed 142 outreach contacts, and we have disposed of 168,000 pounds of trash that were removed. Those numbers represent very different aspects of our homelessness system, housing outcomes, direct outreach, and community impact. That's intentional. Our goal is to look at this issue comprehensively and continue to improve data that we can all understand. Communication also means creating opportunities for conversation outside of the council chambers. On July 31st, we held our very first public outreach opportunity, Coffee with the City, featuring homeless services. It gave community members an opportunity to hear directly from city and our important partners, ask questions, and better understand how the homeless response system actually works. As you can see, it was standing room, and it was well attended, so it was really awesome. We are aiming for spring to be the next opportunity. North County Homeless Network also has a convening coming up in October. This will be recognizing the Domestic Violence Awareness Month and will focus on domestic violence and homelessness in partnership with Lumina Alliance. This is an important intersection, particularly when we talk about housing stability and pathways out of homelessness. The goal of the North County Homeless Network isn't simply to convene partners, it's to improve what happens after they leave the room. Stronger referral pathways, fewer gaps between services, new partnerships, and better coordination around really complex issues that no single organization can address alone. That same emphasis on coordination carries into Council's second objective, expanding affordable housing opportunities. Council's second objective focuses on expanding affordable housing opportunities, which is a significant effort under one of the city's applications we recently submitted in June through our city's encampment resolution funding application. The application is designed to pair encampment resolution with additional housing opportunities and stronger pathways into permanent housing. We're also continuing engagement with key stakeholders in the area and have developed frequently asked questions so that if the housing opportunity does move forward, we'll find out next month, we'll be ready to go. Another tangible result of the North County Homeless Network is our recent health pop-up with community health centers, CAPSLO, and Family Circle. We just completed this last Friday. Our third objective is increasing access to behavioral health, detox, and substance use services. Through this partnership developed through the network, we are able to bring a healthcare provider and supportive services directly to the individuals experiencing homelessness. The pop-up connected 28 individuals with a primary care doctor, health and housing navigation, testing and treatment, as well as basic resources like food and water. We've already seen the value of this coordination. Two individuals who have experienced significant barriers to engagement were connected from this pop-up to our community action team, and both have been placed in permanent housing. So being able to be that first contact with them and then have all of the access with our licensed psych tech to how to get them connected to services has been a great example of how the network is moving forward from just a conversation to a partnership, and also outcomes for our community members. Two areas we're currently focusing on, like I keep talking about, is the Black Oak Drive Corridor and the Riverwalk Trail. And the Black Oak neighborhood efforts include daily trash can servicing, thank you to Paso Waste and Recycle, expanding no overnight parking signage along the Riverside Road. The Earthshine and Echo have an Adopt-a-Street partnership, and Echo has a trash can on campus where bags can be distributed, and Echo's forthcoming Good Neighbor policy. We will reconvene business owners in the fall, and along the Riverwalk Trail, we're planning for expanding lighting thanks to the Recreation Foundation partnership and continuing monthly Earthshine cleanup events. So like I say, no single intervention is going to address every issue. The strategy is to layer improvements. So before I transition over to our point in time, I just wanted to close to again thank Council for their inclusion of housing and homelessness as a strategic goal, because it gives us a clear framework for continuing the work already established through our adopted strategic plan on addressing homelessness. I will pass it over to Linda Belch, our Deputy Director of the county, to talk about our point in time results.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. My name is Linda Belch, Deputy Director with the County of San Luis Obispo Department of Social Services, Homeless Services Division. Tonight, I'll be sharing information about the point-in-time count countywide and also information specific to the City of Paso Robles. I want to begin by recognizing the scale of this effort. This year, 261 volunteers deployed from logistics centers across the county. We also received technical and operational support from county IT and GIS staff, Cal Poly interns, city staff, the Institute for Community Alliance, and our homeless services team. More importantly, we want to acknowledge the individuals experiencing homelessness who participated in the count and shared information about their experiences. Their participation is essential to helping us understand homelessness in our community. I'll begin by sharing a countywide snapshot, highlighting major trends, including inventory context, and then spend the latter part of this presentation looking specifically at the City of Paso Robles information. The total number of persons experiencing homelessness is comprised of both sheltered and unsheltered homelessness. Sheltered homelessness for this measure is defined as emergency shelters, such as the 90-day or overnight programs, transitional housing, or temporary housing with services for families or individuals. Unsheltered homelessness refers to someone living outside or in a place not meant for habitation, such as living in vehicles, under overpasses, or on sidewalks. On the night of January 26, 2026, the point-in-time count identified 1,118 people experiencing homelessness countywide. Of those, 666 were experiencing unsheltered homelessness, and 452 were staying in emergency shelter or transitional housing. Put another way, that's about 60% of people counted were unsheltered, with 40% able to access needed shelter. The point-in-time count is a one-night snapshot of homelessness in our community. For the sheltered count, we use HMIS data. For the unsheltered count, volunteers canvass the county and collect information via both interviews or observational counts. In 2024, we moved from a sample survey methodology to a more complete census approach, and we repeated that methodology in 2026 with enhanced GIS mapping. We cross-verified surveys and observations to remove duplicates and improve accuracy. While no point-in-time count captures every person experiencing homelessness, using a consistent methodology gives us important tools for understanding trends over time. There are three findings that I want to highlight. First, fewer people are experiencing homelessness overall. The countywide count is down 22% from 2022. The reduction in unsheltered homelessness is even greater and is down 42% since 2022. Additionally, veteran homelessness saw marked improvement and declined 47% since 2024. As with prior point-in-time counts, the majority of the unsheltered population are adult-only households. This represented about 87% of all the households counted in 2026. The report also identifies areas where we need to continue improving. Youth and family homelessness have not shown the same level of progress as some of other populations did. Chronic homelessness and complex service needs remain significant challenges. And while we have expanded housing and shelter inventory, there is an opportunity to improve how fully that inventory is utilized through countywide coordinated entry and stronger provider partnerships. As we move into the data, I want to emphasize that these are not simply numbers on a chart. Each number represents a person in our community and helps us understand where the system is working and where we have room to improve. This chart gives us the longer-term perspective. Total homelessness reached 1,483 people in 2019 and remained high in 2022. By 2024, it had fallen to 1,175, and in 2026, it declined again to 1,118. The most significant change is in unsheltered homelessness, from 1,156 people in 2022 to 800 in 2024 and 666 in 2026. This slide looks more closely at the shift between sheltered and unsheltered homelessness. The direction we want to see is exactly as what is occurring. The unsheltered population is declining, while the number of people who are able to access shelter is increasing. This matters because shelter provides more than a place to sleep. It creates a safer environment and a more consistent opportunity to connect with people for case management, behavioral health services, benefits, housing navigation, and ultimately permanent housing. Looking at the same information as a proportion makes the change even clearer. In 2019, nearly 80% of the people counted were unsheltered. Homelessness impacts every region in our county. San Luis Obispo accounts for approximately 45%, while North County is 34%, South County at 18%, and the coastal region about 3%. One point I do want to emphasize that there are many factors that can influence a point in time count, including the number of volunteers in any one particular area and whether any encampment clearances occurred recently prior to the count. While this regional distribution is an important metric, a full understanding of homelessness needs to be including both point in time data and data from the HMIS system. For tonight's discussion, the important point really is that roughly one third of the countywide point in time population is in North County. That emphasizes the importance of strong North County shelter, outreach, housing, behavioral health, and city partnerships. The age distribution shows that homelessness affects residents across their lifespan. The largest group are adults between 35 and 64, but we also counted children, transition-aged youth, and older adults. This diversity matters because appropriate response is not the same for every household. This slide shows the racial and ethnic composition of the point-in-time population. We monitor this information because an effective homelessness response also needs to understand whether a particular population is disproportionately represented and whether access to services and housing opportunities is equitable. One of the questions we frequently hear is whether people experiencing homelessness in San Luis Obispo County are primarily coming here from somewhere else. Among the unsheltered residents who responded to this question, the overwhelming majority have lived in San Luis Obispo County for at least 1 year, and many here for more than five. While this chart shows the countywide trend, I was able to pull out the reporting data for the city of Paso Robles in specific. Data collected for persons experiencing homelessness in the city of Paso Robles showed that 75% have lived in San Luis Obispo County for at least 5 years, with another 17% having lived in San Luis Obispo County for between 1 to 5 years. The 2026 data also shows that a substantial number of people are staying in vehicles, with smaller numbers in parks, under bridges, overpasses, or in abandoned buildings and other locations. These shifts matter because outreach strategies need to adapt to where people are actually staying. Vehicular homelessness, for example, requires a different engagement approach than a concentrated encampment. This slide adds an important piece of context. The homelessness response system has more capacity than it did several years ago. The housing inventory count shows that 1,737 beds were available in 2026, with 1,493 occupied on the night measured, or about an 86% utilization. One of the reasons we see a dip in utilization is because of the expansion of warming center capacity countywide. As part of the 2026 point in time, we asked providers to activate their warming center beds. However, the weather was not as cold or rainy as it is on nights when those warming center beds are typically activated. So we did see some empty warming center beds. Outside of the warming center beds, we do see an opportunity to continue strengthening referral pathways, coordinated entry, and provider coordination to ensure that people are being matched to the available resources. I want to shift now from the countywide picture to the city of Paso Robles. On the night of the 2026 point-in-time count, 266 people were counted in Paso Robles. Of those, 183 were unsheltered and 83 were sheltered. That means approximately 69% were unsheltered and 31% were sheltered. Paso Robles accounted for about 27% of the entire countywide point-in-time count, which again underscores the importance of our partnerships together. Looking at age in Paso Robles, most of the individuals represented in this data are adults between 25 and 54, which is generally consistent with the broader countywide pattern. The data also includes children, transition-aged youth, older adults, and seniors. I do want to highlight that there were no children under the age of 18 counted in the unsheltered portion of the count. So what has contributed to this encouraging trend? Since the previous point-in-time count, more than 300 additional affordable housing units have been completed, creating more permanent destinations for people moving out of homelessness. We have expanded access to shelter, including local warming shelter support, and increased emergency shelter capacity. Outreach and engagement have expanded, along with stronger provider coordination and more targeted connection to shelter, housing, and critical services. We've also leveraged our coordinated entry system and integrated many processes through there in order to leverage the power of coordinated response. We should not attribute the point-in-time decline to any one intervention, but taken together, these investments and system improvements are consistent with the progress we are seeing, particularly the substantial decline in unsheltered homelessness. The 2026 point-in-time count gives us reason to be encouraged. We have fewer people experiencing homelessness, significantly fewer people living unsheltered, and more people connected to shelter than we did 4 years ago. But this progress does not mean the work is finished. The population that remains unsheltered increasingly requires intensive, coordinated interventions that make our partnerships even more important. Paso Robles and North County are essential partners in this regional response. The progress reflected in these numbers is something we have accomplished together, and continued coordination will be critical to sustaining that progress and helping more people move from homelessness to housing. Thank you for your partnership, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, no, yeah, there one. Okay. Okay, yeah. Thank you, Linda. Thank you, Ashley. Pro Tem Gregor, you had a question.
Yes. Linda, thank you for the report, and Ashley for yours. In the beginning of your presentation, you said families are a critical mass. With the recent opening of the 30 beds for families at Echo and Tascadero, will that assist in that a lot because it's a housing issue?
Thank you. Yeah, so Echo's family wing that they opened, we're excited to celebrate with them. We do have families that are currently in shelter, but they might be in hotels. And so while they're not represented in our point-in-time count, those families can now move into a location with more support and resources. So we're very excited to see that come online.
Thank you.
Okay. Over here, Chris. Chris Bell.
Thank you, Linda. Thank you, Ashley. The
you have a question.
The point came up the other night, the transition from homelessness to Echo to Home Key, some other service, to society. That's a process. That takes a while. It doesn't happen overnight. Government-assisted housing of some kind is critical to making that happen. But the goal is to get out of government-assisted housing into self-supported housing. We're doing a good job of that, but we're still massively short on the number of beds, rooms, homes that we need. Any guess, any feel for what would make a meaningful impact and how to make that happen? We saw a number on the slide that I hadn't seen before. On your housing, you think you had 300 that have been built countywide? If we had another 300, that would help, obviously, but what are we actually short, do you think?
That's an excellent question, and I don't know that I have a good answer, other than I know our partners in affordable housing have been working really hard to bring those units online, and that has significantly helped. A large part of the struggle with building affordable housing is they are also competing for limited resources at the state, the tax credits and things like that. So I think the best thing we could do as a community is to advocate for continued investment in those tax credits so that our affordable housing builders can bring those units online. We have units that have been in development for literally decades, just trying to find that funding to actually open the doors. And so if we can unlock that resource, I think we would see pretty incredible results pretty fast.
And then the last, the survey that we use on our phones, those numbers aren't transferable to our the survey. That once that point in time count is done, that survey is over. So we just have to go back to the website and pick up that that bottom location, right?
Yes, so the community report's available online that has all of the numbers available. They don't have the city of House of Robles pulled out specifically, but I'd be happy to pull the information from the presentation and give you like a one-sheet handout if that'd be helpful.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah, no
Thank
problem.
You.
Yeah, absolutely.
Councilman Beal.
Thank you. Super information. I think I know the answer to this, but I want to make sure. You said that there was a material change or an improvement in housing unhoused veterans. Can you speak to what is behind that and what we can learn from it?
Absolutely. So we have a wonderful program called SSVF. So there is dedicated funding for veterans to house them, which is always helpful. Previously, that program was run in multiple silos with Excel sheets, right, to track the different tasks that needed to be completed. Last year, the HMIS staff was able to embed that workflow into HMIS. So the case manager's ability to do case managing by name, by the veterans, to know exactly who needs to be served, exactly what resources are available, and have coordinated case response is definitely something that we're looking at as having had a major positive impact on the veteran homelessness numbers.
That's great. And would you say that the funding for our unhoused veterans is different than funding for other groups, or?
It is different. We do have dedicated funding sources. So money is always sometimes the deciding factor on who can be moved into housing. Again, we're so grateful for those resources for our veterans who definitely are worthy of that, but additional resources to serve the rest of the population would definitely be helpful.
Thank you. And then I have a question for Ashley. Ashley, I'm very excited to see the pop-up health collaboration that's happening. Can you talk me through what the thinking is on how often you would do that? Will it be on a schedule? How do you see that evolving?
Yeah, thanks to the county, the CAPSLO did apply for a grant. So they are there every Friday to provide reproductive health and also just general checkups. What we found in that time is that people were, you can test live there. They were testing positive for hepatitis C, but our provider was not able to treat it. So we reached out to CHC, Community Health Centers, and talked about this specific need. They helped us identify a doctor who knows how to treat it. And if you didn't know, I just found out, you can be cured from hepatitis C in 12 weeks with treatment. So we were spreading the word around the riverbed and were able to do some direct outreach to those who have tested positive, in which people were open to receiving treatment. What I think is the biggest outcome out of that is just being able to get people to advocate for themselves and a level of health. And we're hoping that conversation can continue. Already we've seen two people be housed once we connect them to our community action team, who can get them with a behavioral health provider, get them an assessment, and then go from there. So it's been a really good like first touch point with folks down there. And getting to also just know them by name and sit down with them at a pop-up has been great.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Council's good. We'll open up the public. Anybody have any question on this one? Dale?
Dale Augustin. I've been very fortunate to have known two individuals that have been involved in the homeless people. One is Noreen Martin. She married Tom Martin, and when Tom Martin sold a business for a lot of money, he said to her, "Is there something I can do that with some of that money?" And Noreen said, "Yes, build a woman's shelter to help the women of domestic violence that are being made homeless. Tom did that. And now Noreen is on TV doing a promo for Women's Alliance, which is the current organization to help those women. And the other person that I want to shout out for is Bob Shore. Bob Shore had a winery and then eventually he retired. And when he retired, he devoted all his time to helping the homeless. He helped start Paso Care, and he's still out there devoting an awful lot of time to helping the homeless. And somebody finally recognized him. Bob Shore has been recognized as Senior of the Month by KSBY, and I laud him for that.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else? Yeah, we do definitely thank all the people of Paso Robles with their helping hands for this particular subject. So,
gentlemen.
Oh. Yep. Tim?
Sorry, 3 minutes.
Yeah. This is speaking to this item, though.
Oh, just sorry. Okay.
Yeah, not yet. Yeah, this is, yeah. So, anyone else on this item? Okay, we'll go ahead and close it. Thank you guys for the information. Appreciate it.
Mayor Hammond, I have a caller.
Oh, okay. We have one caller.
Stephanie Potter.
Stephanie, can you hear us? Go ahead.
Hi, yes, Stephanie with Echo. I just wanted to thank Linda and Ashley, and thank you so much to the city for your continued support and partnership. Because of collaborations like this, we're able to provide so many vital resources and programs to individuals and families experiencing homelessness every day. This work really is a community effort, and it takes all of us coming together to create a lasting impact. We're just so grateful to be doing this work alongside all of you and to be tackling this together. So again, just thank you.
Thank you for your service for these people. Thank you. Anyone else?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you, Melissa. We'll go ahead and close this item. Now, we'll go ahead and move on to general public comments. This is the time that the public may address the City Council on items within its purview but not scheduled on tonight's agenda. Council or staff may briefly respond to statements or questions posed by the public. Please fill out a speaker card and hand it to our city clerk upon speaking. You'll have 3 minutes. Those people wishing to speak on any item scheduled on tonight's agenda will be given the opportunity at the time the item is being considered. So Tim, now you're up.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Tim Francis. I'm the new commander of the American Legion. For those of you who don't know what the American Legion is, it's filled with members who have served honorably. Like our police over there, we are trained to be defensive and offensively with precision and discipline. Like the firefighters, we're trained to run towards trouble. Sometimes we got in trouble. But that's not really what I came here about. I wanted to just let you know a few things about the American Legion for those who don't know, that we help and serve our community in many ways. We help with the Boys and Girls State. We help with Echo, Honor Flight, Veterans Helping Veterans, Coats for Kids, Slow Food Bank, Toy Bank, Paso Care, Skills for USA, and we have our own Legion baseball team now, if you didn't know that. But I also want to talk about three events that we have going on. I'm going to pass some flyers. I'll put them there at the back. Just so you know, on the 29th of August, we're having a music venue there where we have 8 recording artists that will be coming and playing at different times. And that will be a free event. And we originally slated it from 12 to 4, but we had so many musicians, it's going 12 to 5. We're also going to have a taco truck. And it's a family event, so bring your family and bring the kids, mom and dad.
Where's that going to be?
That is going to be at the Veterans Hall, which is at 240 Scott Street. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I have some flyers on there. For those of you who don't know that, on Thursdays, we have a hamburger lunch. It is the cheapest hamburger in town for $8. Can you get a burger anywhere else for $8? Mm-hmm. No, you can't. And we serve it with coleslaw, chips, and cookies. So come on out. It's between 11 and 1 every Thursday. Also, we have another event coming up for our American Legion Riders, and that will be on September 26th, and that is their poker run. okay? And that is our biggest fundraiser that we have for the entire year. So we encourage everybody to come out for that. Anybody have any questions about the American Legion? Ask me now, I'll tell you all about it. And I know you guys don't really see us very often come up here. I know my partner with the VFW, Leo, comes out here. But thank you.
Thank you, Commander Francis. Appreciate you for being here tonight. Bill, welcome.
Mayor, council members, community members, good evening. My name is Bill Britton, and I'm here representing the Spaceport Working Group. I want to take a couple minutes tonight to invite the council and our community to something I think is going to be very special for Paso Robles. It is the kickoff of the Global Positioning Satellite, GPS, Heritage and Space Innovation Awards kickoff event. This is sponsored by several organizations in town to include the Paso Robles Rotary. This event will be held on a very special date, September 11th, from 4:30 to 6 p.m. at the Warbirds Museum. Now, the idea behind this is pretty simple. Honor the people who helped change the world and use their story to inspire the people who will change it next. Now, GPS is something most of us are very familiar with. It's on your phone tracking you. I mean, you're using it to track yourself. It's available in your car. It's everywhere. Now, I don't know if you know that Paso Robles has a very remarkable connection to the GPS story. And that is that the father of GPS, the gentleman's name is Dr. Bradford Parkinson. Not only is he the father of GPS, but he's also the father of our sheriff, Ian Parkinson. Also, in our region, Dr. Michael Yarmovich was the chief scientist of the Air Force when Dr. Parkinson was pushing the project through, and his son Nick lives in this region as well. So we have a very strong connectivity to that, and what we're doing is using this event as the launch point. That's a space pun for those who didn't pick it up. As a launch point for two different, what we believe are very unique, Paso Robles Awards. The first being the Parkinson-Yarmovich Heritage Award. It is an award to someone working in the aerospace innovation arena, and that'll be given to an individual as a plaque that awards them for something they've done special, particularly for development of the aerospace business in this region. The second one is really exciting. It is the Parkinson-Yarmovich Scholarship. It's an annual $5,000 a year scholarship to a student graduating pursuing a degree or credential or technical education in a field connected to space and aerospace. And that's kind of why it belongs here in Paso Robles, is we have the Warbirds Museum, an extraordinary aviation heritage. We're going to be acquiring models of satellites and launch systems to be placed in the museum and use that kickoff to honor these pioneers to develop that connectivity of our past, our present, and our future. And so, who are we going to inspire to build what comes next? Our youth. And that's what we're trying to focus on, is connecting the youth to our past and the future. Thank you very much. I hope to see you there.
Thank you for your leadership, Bill. Appreciate the help. Welcome.
Good evening. On behalf of Paso Robles Democratic Party, after a review of our mid-state fair presence, where we averaged over 100 positive contacts from the attendees, and that's in a four-hour shift, we want to give a major shout out to the city's maintenance department for working all night to fix the major water main break at the 24th Street overpass. The fair opened as scheduled without delay, and everyone had a good time. There must have been a lot of booze sold that day.
You bet.
We enjoyed our time there. We only saw about six fistfights after the concerts. So that's what I wanted to say. But I have a question. When is council moving to your...
I've asked that many times.
It's really hard to hear.
Maybe we can get a little update toward the end of the meeting. We'll let you know how things are going.
Thank
it's
you.
Getting close. Thank you. Anyone else? And do we have anyone online, Melissa?
No, sir.
Okay. We'll go ahead and close the public comment. Thank you. We'll move on then to agendas items to be deferred. Oh, you want to go ahead and give a little report now?
Sure, Mayor, I can. Our goal is to get you back in there. Initially, it was going to be the end of September. I think it's trending more to early October now. But we're working on it. I was in there today. There's a lot of work happening. There are several different facets to that project. We're assembling some IT equipment off-site that has to come in. There was some saw cutting work that had to be done that wasn't originally anticipated in the location that it needed to be done. And then again, we have some longer lead times on some other items. So the work is continuing. There's a lot of dust going on right now in that facility. I think it's going to be better than when you last saw it. And greatly appreciate the patience. I know the technology in the space here isn't what we had before, but we're going to be returning you, I think, to a nice new chamber very quickly, and we'll keep you updated. Happy to send out more periodic updates for the council as the project continues. And happy to give tours if anyone would like a quick check-in tour of the project.
Yeah, I was in there 2 days ago, and it's getting there. But yeah, thank you, Chris. Appreciate it. On to you then. Again, agendas, items to be deferred.
No items tonight, Mayor, to be deferred.
Okay. Can you give us an overview of items on consent?
Yes, Mayor. Happy to do so. We have 9 items on consent calendar night. The first is the approval of the minutes from your August 4th council meeting. Second is the receipt of advisory body meeting minutes. This is for several advisory body meetings, including the community services special joint reorganization meeting that took place on June 17th, the Youth Commission meeting on July 1st, the Parks and Recreation Advisory Committee meeting on July 13th, and the Senior Citizens Advisory Committee meeting also on July 13th. Item number 3 is the designation of voting delegates and alternates for the 2026 League of California Cities. And staff is also recommending the council take a support position on a proposed resolution that will be considered at the conference. Mayor, if I may, given the nature of this item with establishing a voting delegate and up to two alternates, the council may want to consider just spending a moment here and figuring that out.
I was going to have it written down. We're going to go there, but why don't you go on?
Perfect. I'll keep going. I just wanted to flag that one since it's a little bit different of an item. Item number 4 is the receipt of a warrant register. The city has made about $4.5 million in various payments since your last meeting. I will cover those transactions that exceed $100,000. The first is a payment to the San Luis Obispo County Public Works Department. This is for energy costs associated with, I believe, the Nacimiento infrastructure. For the months of January through March, this comes out of the water fund in the amount of $142,269.06. Next is a payment to Sousa Construction. This is for the construction related to the downtown parking lot repairs coming out of the capital fund in the amount of $145,274.55. Next is a payment to Visit SloCal. This is a pass-through payment for the amount of the assessment that's collected to fund the Visit SoCal operations. This is for May of 2026 in the amount of $139,659.73. Similarly, next item is a payment to Travel Paso, again, for their work in the Tourism Improvement District. Again, this is a pass-through amount for May of 2026 assessments in the amount of $185,273.03. Next is a payment to USA Bank for the 2019 general obligation bonds in the amount of $1,676,750. Next is a payment to GHD Inc. This is related to work that the city is undertaking on the US 101 46 West roundabout project in partnership with SloCog in the amount of $120,380.02. Next is a payment to our risk pool, California JPIA. This is a payment for our annual property insurance program in the amount of $329,945. And then finally, Mayor, on the warrant register, we have a payment to First American Title Company. This is related to a parcel that the city is purchasing for the 24th Street Bridge widening project that the council previously approved in the amount of $389,685. Jumping back over to the consent calendar, item number 5 is the approval of the general obligation bond tax rate for fiscal year 26-27. Just a unique note here, it is not a typo in your agenda. The approved rate is 0000. Essentially, we're getting towards the end of the bond terms, and between reserves and other revenues that are coming into that fund, there's no need to assess properties for the fiscal year for the general obligation bond repayment. Item number 6 is the approval of a resolution that authorizes submittal of a grant application for years 26-27 and 27-28. This is to the state for a beverage container recycling grant. If approved, this funding would be utilized to help reduce and divert beverage containers and the use of beverage containers by installation of certain water fountains and water filling stations at various city facilities. There is no local match required for that grant. Item number 7 is the approval of a resolution that authorizes the city to enter into a contract for certain engineering services. We have had some changes in our engineering division and are temporarily down some staff while we go through those transitions. This contract is necessary in part to keep projects moving and keep engineering services moving forward. Item number 8 is a notable item. It's the approval of a community park maintenance agreement and acceptance of phase 1 park improvements. This is out in the Olson South Chandler specific plan area. This includes the city's acceptance of pickleball courts, as well as a restroom facility and landscaping area. These are separate and in addition to the Sherwood pickleball courts. So if this is accepted today, I believe I've been told that they will open tomorrow officially to the public if that is to happen. And then item number 9 is the approval of a memorandum of agreement between the city and the County of San Luis Obispo regarding the city's 2026 sphere of influence update. This is a process we go through with LAFCO, and this agreement helps provide some framework and guidelines to how that process is going to work. It really does not bind the city or LAFCO to any requirement or any one thing, but it's more of a general agreement in principle of how that process is going to work. So with that, Mayor, we're happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Huat. Items on consent calendar are considered routine and do not normally require separate discussion. However, any member of the council or the public that has specific questions or wants a clarification on an item, we can get those answered before the vote is taken. Secondly, any member of the council who wants a full discussion of a particular item will cause that item to be pulled and, from the consent and move to the discussion items for agenda for tonight. I will ask the public first if they have any questions, then I'm going to bring it back to council. So anybody wishing to have a question? Dale?
Dale Gustin. As to the Lake Nacimiento water that's being piped down to Paso Robles, when is Paso Robles ever going to start really using that instead of pumping it into the river to go north?
Well, we can answer that if you like. Christopher, I hate to ask you to come all the way up, but we are definitely using water. Yeah, it's still limping a little bit, yeah.
Big injury.
Yeah. Christopher, you got the question.
Yeah, the city of Paso Robles has been using NACI water since that pipeline has been completed. In fact, we built a surface water treatment plant microfiltration facility dedicated specifically to treating that water. That plant runs all year round. It treats about 2 million gallons a day. We also use Nacimiento water to recharge our Salinas River underflow, our major well field in the city. So we use a significant amount of NACI water all year long.
I think we're the major user of NACI right
now. We are the
right
primary user off of that pipeline.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Christopher. Anyone else? Question? Sharon, welcome.
Hi, Sharon Roden, Pass Robles. Just a quick clarification on number 7 with the engineering. I think it's not more than 500,000. Can you give clarification of how much of that is actually passed through to applicants and how much is actually going to be absorbed by the city?
It's mostly all recovered, but Chris, can you handle that one?
Yes. Thank you, Mayor. So in your staff report, we don't provide an exact number, but a significant portion of this amount is recovered both through engineering permit and development related fees. A small amount may be not recoverable because it's time spent on a city project that is outside a development related item, but for the most part, it's development related.
A follow-up question on that too. We are on the hunt for a new engineer, and can you give us a little status of what's happening there?
Yes, we retained a recruiter. We're out in the marketplace right now for a new engineer. I believe, I'm going to defer to Mr. Fraze. We're still in that recruitment period, but he may be able to provide an updated timeline for you.
Yeah, we're in the application period. It closes on the 24th, and then we'll roll into interview process.
Very good. Thank you, Warren. Anyone else on consent questions from the public? Anyone online, Melissa?
No, sir.
Okay, we'll bring it back then to council. Any council member have any questions on a particular one? Councilman Bausch.
I think we're going to discuss J3.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to. I also have a question on.
Yeah, we're going to get into that.
Also have a question on J5 and J6.
Okay, why don't we just take 3 real quick and let's open that up for discussion. We need to basically designate a member of our council to be the voting delegate. Fred, I think you've been in the past the main lead on that. Would you agree to do that again? So now we also need to have a alternate, 1 or 2?
Cal Cities allows up to 2 voting alternates.
Okay.
I'll volunteer.
I'm not going this year. Chris, are you going? Okay. Any other discussion on that? Okay. So we can go ahead and then designate Fred and Chris as being our 2 primary ones that we're going to be doing that. And then you had a little information on a particular resolution that you want to discuss?
So some years there's a policy resolution that Cal Cities will consider and that the voting delegate will have to consider, and some years there are not. This year there was a resolution proposed. There's a summary in your staff report. Essentially, given the amount and the number of housing-related bills and land use bills coming out of the state, this resolution calls for the League of California Cities to support the development of some sort of state. They're calling it either a constitutional amendment or other policy to strengthen local authority over certain land use decisions and housing decisions, zoning and density and that sort of thing, as opposed to, I think, what a lot of cities have been seeing and feeling over the last many years, which is less opportunity to determine, you know, what may best fit in a certain area or in a certain parcel. There's kind of this one-size-fits-all model that I know a lot of cities have been feeling coming down from the state. So this is non-binding, in meaning that this doesn't bind the state to actually make any changes. This is simply directing the work plan and part of the league for the foreseeable future to work on this issue.
So essentially it says basically local control, more of it. I certainly would agree that we should always support local control rather than Sacramento. So do we have like a consensus from the council that that would be the